We're on paper 21, section 3, which is old single column, page 237. Okay, so let's see. So remember, we're reading about the Paradise Creator Sons here. We have this whole paper on the Paradise Creator Sons. I don't think we really need any preface. You can see what the title of the next section is. We're going to talk a little bit about another parallel to the evolutionary sequence that we were referring to last time. You've got a progression of stages of what a creator son is up to, getting ready, to go out and then going out. That parallels a creative spirit getting ready to be birthed and then going out. And you remember how we were going through that? So, you've got another parallel here to that whole long sequence from the beginning of their existence, Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit, heading towards Grand Universe being settled in light and life. So let's see how they approach this one. You'll discover there's a fun little pattern that they've secreted into this list.
3, local universe sovereignty. A Creator Son is given the range of a universe by the consent of the Paradise Trinity, and to the confirmation of the supervising master spirit of the super universe concerned. Such action constitutes title of physical possession, a cosmic leasehold. But the elevation of a Michael Son from this initial and self-limited stage of rulership to the experiential supremacy of self-earned sovereignty comes as a result of his own personal experiences in the work of universe creation and incarnated bestowal. Until the achievement of bestowal-earned sovereignty, he rules as vicegerent of the Universal Father.
Okay, just make a good, strong mental note of that last line. It's an important designation to remember when you're thinking about Creator Sons prior to becoming Master Sons. That line, vicegerent of the Universal Father, deputy ruler serving for the Universal Father. Now, notice the now becoming insanely repetitious theme that we're noticing. There's the Trinity again, right, in the first sentence. As we've been stressing for several papers now, this is the thing that it's high time you began to, really take note of. That unlike your initial sense, an awful lot of what goes on in the universe of universes is rooted in the Trinity, not so much in the Father, Son, and Spirit. Yes, they have a very important role. Nothing gets initiated without the Father. The Father is the initiator, etc. But, here you have it again. Just like a finaliter doesn't take an oath to the Father or the Son or the Spirit, takes an oath to the Paradise Trinity. Who does the Creator Son have to go to get consent? Not the Father, not the Son, not the Spirit. Not two of them, not all three of them, none of them. The Paradise Trinity. And then look at how they've worded that. A Creator Son is given the range. Now you go, I don't know if I remember that word occurring too many times. Yeah, they're trying to get you to think. The range of a universe by the consent of the Paradise Trinity. And, of course, with the confirmation of the supervising Master Spirit and whatever super universe he happens to pick, the site for his local universe. But the Paradise Trinity has to give consent. And why? Well, we've been talking about totality attitudes, coordinate action, cosmic overcontrol. Those three functionings of the Paradise Trinity. A totality attitude. When they say range, a literal, land-like designation like that. You should be thinking along those lines, but a little bit more precisely. When you get into really, you know, beginning to understand the different facets of deity, remember how I pointed out that they tell you up in the foreword, the Paradise Trinity, that facet of deity, is the only facet of deity that directly engages infinity, that directly engages the totality of reality, that directly engages reality. It's the only facet of deity that directly engages reality. Okay? That very fundamentally, you know, the root of non-personalizable deity is the facet of deity that's allowed to directly engage reality. If you let anything that has shades of personalizability directly engage reality, it's going to wrap its arms around reality and make everything into one fact, God the Infinite. You can't allow that. So that which can encompass, you know, and make itself God the Infinite has to be bounded away from directly being able to engage reality. Well, that's where I'm coming from. And that's the place that he's going out to. You know, this constitutes title of physical possession. You know, just stressing, we're talking, you know, rubber meets the road reality here. Okay. Who's in charge of that? Who has a hold of that fact? One and only one thing, Paradise Trinity. So that's why, you know, that's the consent. And if you think about it like that, the Paradise Trinity really being that which has a hold directly of the domain where we are, then you better appreciate the existential rooted facets of deity, like the Father, the Son, the Spirit, you know, what they're about. They're about, you know, either injecting into that held domain, or supplying a transcendental contrast to that domain, or things like that. They're not down in the transcendental deity is just that. It's transcendental deity. It's God that's on the outside, not God that's on the inside. Yep.
So outside is not you don't use the word reality when you refer to that which is outside?
Well, you do. Okay, but just again, to think about a little more precisely about the Universal Father standing, you know, quote unquote, on the Isle of Paradise. Or let's call it the Paradise Isle. They don't use that adjective paradise to directly describe the nature of him. They'll describe his location, call him the Paradise Father. Okay. But he's not of paradise stuff, you know, as it were, like the Isle is. And one other fact. Paradise Trinity. You know, I mean, we stress that when we look at the, you know, the ellipse. You know, and right here, when you know that outer circuit, that individuality circuit, when you're thinking like the seven absolutes of infinity, and the Paradise Isle being one of those, you know, what's there with it in this more complete picture? The Paradise Trinity. Paradise Isle, Paradise Trinity. They have this very fundamental commonality of paradiseness. You know, that you can, in a sense, think of them sort of cohabitating the inside of the aisle, as it were. You know, and there's that footprint of the functioning of the Trinity of Absoluteness on the upper surface that encompasses, you know, that surrounds the three presences, three deity presences. And then another paradise you have that center point also where, as the co-infinite one, the Paradise Trinity sort of manifests, you know, as an antipodal, you know, point to the infinite one on the top. Okay, but you know, really, see that, you know, what it, the center of reality is what? It's the aisle. Who is really intimately touching the aisle? And in a sense, everything else relates the aisle through the Trinity. The Father it has a direct relationship to the Trinity. You know, it's the other side of the Paradise Trinity, the other side of the universal one of infinity, you know, is the first center. So there's the root of the Father. And the Son relates to the Father, who relates to the Paradise Trinity, who relates to the aisle, and the Spirit relates to the Son, who relates to the Father, who relates to the Paradise Trinity, who relates to the aisle. But the Paradise Trinity is really the only thing that directly engages in the infinity, including its nucleus. You know, the center of infinity is the aisle. You know, we're lowercase I infinity, you know, which means the totality of reality. He says that's a very different picture, you know, than anything we've ever had before. We've always had the Father say in some very direct way engaging things, not actually. This distinction is vital. We're in a cosmic system, okay? The individual members are not connected with each other, except in relation to the whole, i.e., the Paradise Trinity, and through the individuality of the whole, you guys, the Mother. Yeah. Right? The whole is the Paradise Trinity. You know, fundamentally, you know, in the sense, you know, in the living sense of that sentence, you know, it's not just the cosmos infinite or something, you know, like that. It's, I mean, what's that? You know, as an individual, what am I connected to in a living way? The whole, you know, is Paradise Trinity, and the individuality of the whole, the mother stems from the Paradise Trinity, you know, like we've talked about a lot. Okay, see, so if you think about that, the Creator Son is given access to a range, a subset of the whole of the cosmos, and goes to the caretaker of the whole and gets consent. Paradise Trinity. Okay, I wanted to kind of really, you know, belabor that a little bit, just to stress it again. Notice it's actually once you start really thinking precisely, stop letting the Paradise Trinity speak to you as if you only knew Christianity, you know, Christian theology. You know, let the revelation speak to you. When you see Trinity, you're seeing something that no one has ever thought about before. Every time the book says Paradise Trinity, it's talking about something that no human has ever thought about before. And it is the fundamental thing that's been missing from all philosophic thought. To understand the fundamental nature of who we are, how we're related to anything. This distinction is vital. Yeah. If you want to think of yourself as a living part of the cosmos, vital life, this distinction is vital. It's how you're connected to any other person, including how you're connected to the Father. The Father has to go through the Mother to get to you. You know, and if you want to think about it a little more precisely, the Father connects to the Mother, and technically, the Mother connects to the Paradise Trinity, because that's the root of the Mother. And the root of the Mother, the Paradise Trinity, is connected to your stuff. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Even that personality circuit, like we talked about, you know, it's a circuit. What's the conductor? What's that volition flowing through in the Father's personality circuit? It's not flowing through nothing. That's why they call it a circuit. It's flowing through something. What's the conductor? You know, it's not matter. It's not a material conductor. It's not mind energy. It's not spirit energy. What's the conductor? It's like, well, there's only those three substances. Well, maybe it's an absinthe substance. Well, it's not an absinthe substance either. Okay, it's deity. That's the stuff that flows through. And specifically what deity? The mother. This distinction is vital. Okay, in order for him on the outside to connect to us on the inside, he has to go through that which pervades the inside, the God of immanence, the mother. The bosom of the Father. Okay? The mother. Okay, so that's really stressed. You see another way that you might have missed that how there's a parallel between a finaliter and creator sons. Both of us are having to go to the Paradise Trinity to really kind of get the final connection to ground ourselves in the cosmos. He's doing it before he leaves. We do it when we get there. It's always that, you know, reciprocal relationship like that. Okay, and then, you know, once you've really stressed that, the Paradise Trinity is at the beginning of this story, and what stems from the Trinity, the Mother, and what that facet of the Mother is the overarching facet of experiential deity, like the Father is the overarching facet of existential deity. And so, undoubtedly, everything you're going to be talking about is about experiential things, not existential things. And, of course, that's, you know, every time you glance down at the page, you see the word experiential. Okay, that's what it's all about. If you're going to have anything to do with experiential reality, your ticket to that fact is the Mother. If you're going to have some relationship to existential reality, the ticket to that's the Father. But whenever we're talking about our experiences or him gaining experiential sovereignty or experiential supremacy or any expression like that, you know that the Mother, and the Paradise Trinity are fundamentally in play. And that, I mean, just one more thing maybe to stress. That's why, you know, when you look at this second from the outside circuit here, you can call that two different things. On the one hand, it's a circuit of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity. You've got the Trinity of Absoluteness, the Trinity of Supremacy, the Trinity of Ultimacy. But at the same time, it's also the Mother, you know. Like I've indicated around the circle. Yeah, they go hand in hand always. All right, so let's get a little bit into the details of the sovereignty then.
A creator son could assert full sovereignty over his personal creation at any time, but he wisely chooses not to. If, prior to passing through the creature bestowals, he assumed an unearned supreme sovereignty, the Paradise personalities resident in his local universe would withdraw. But this has never happened throughout all the creations of time and space.
Why would they withdraw? Because he would be in
rebellion.
Right. Notice how they word that. But he wisely chooses not to. And why do they say it that way instead of... But because he's perfect, he chooses not to. He could have said that. They didn't. They said he wisely. It's like, well, let's see, what do I know about wisely and wisdom? Well, I guess there's the spirit of wisdom. That comes to mind right up front. Where does the spirit of wisdom come from that I'm utilizing? The creative mother spirit, right? Right, we get again, just by saying wisely, they're reminding you that It's that relationship to the universal harmony upheld by the mother, you know, that basically is the presence of the mother, that makes him rebellion-proof. The prince's staff divide up sides about who joins the rebellion and who doesn't. Do the ones that stayed loyal, is it because they had adjusters? They had this really intimate connection to the father? No, none of them had adjusters. What was the difference between Van and Nod? Wisdom. Relationship to the mother. They both had equally consecrated their will to the perfect will of God the Father. It's a pretty definitive consecration, more than we've experienced yet. That consecration brought both of them all the way up to Gerizim. Pretty heavy-duty consecration to the perfect will of God the Father. But there was a differential. It wasn't that. It wasn't father relationship to differentiate them. It was how much had they consecrated their mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. That's the key. Van had quite a bit. Nod had not enough. The other nine that served with Van, the ten that were on his council, none of them rebelled. You remember, that's not an accident. The Most Highs, looked at the 100 and looked at those who had the greatest consecration to the universal harmony of God the Mother and put them in, Van and the other nine of them in that group. They needed to be rebellion-proof. They're the stopgap. The ones that had less were in other groups. So the Most Highs, had put them in the balance and felt the difference, and sorted them out. All right, so if we want to be sophistry proof, it's not about just consecration of will. Obviously, nothing's going to get started if you don't consecrate your will. That initiates the process. But what actually makes you sophistry proof is how much you've taken delight in cultivating. A consecration of mind to the universal harmony. How much wisdom, insight, and foresight do you have? Not how much intent to make it to paradise. Nod had lots of intent to make it to paradise, and that didn't serve him well enough. We're finding out that in order to be given sovereignty, there has to be this definitive relationship to the God of experience.
The fact of creatorship implies the fullness of sovereignty, but the Michaels choose to experientially earn it, thereby retaining the full cooperation of all paradise personalities attached to the local universe administration. We know of no Michael who ever did otherwise, but they all could. They are truly free will sons.
And just to stress, but the Michaels choose to experientially earn it, not because, that'd be more fun. Why don't I do it that way? It's not because of that, They choose to experientially earn it because then and only then is it a reality in the finite domain. That's what makes you real. That's what makes their relationship real. They by grace, they have the ability just to step off of paradise and go out there. In the same way, by grace, you have an initial encirclement in the Holy Spirit. But it's just the minimum requirement to get you started with some process. This process, in his case, our ascension process, in our case. Everything else, you have to choose to be part of the experiential reality. And just saying, well, I exist, isn't that enough? No, it's not enough. Remember what Jesus, Jesus even told a story about that. You know, the person gets there and says, I exist, and Michael says, I never knew you. Like, what do you mean you never knew me? Look, I exist. I'm standing right here. And he says, I never knew you. Like, well, I don't, yeah. Michael is measuring how much relationship to experiential deity you have. And if you have zero, his answer is, I never knew you. Your size is, your volume is zero. You didn't take delight in cultivating. Okay, so, yeah, and see, in their case, that grace, you know, is just a fact of creatorship, like they're saying. I mean, they made a creator being, so that obviously gives them a, you know, pretty big initial relationship to a lot of things. But far from complete. Perfect, but far from complete. Just like when we get to the Isle of Paradise, we're perfect, but far from complete.
The sovereignty of a creator son in a local universe passes through six, perhaps seven, stages of experiential manifestation. These appear in the following order. 1. Initial vicegerent sovereignty. The solitary provisional authority exercised by a creator son before the acquirement of personal qualities by the associated creative spirit. 2. Conjoint vicegerent sovereignty, the joint rule of the paradise pair subsequent to the personality achievement of the universal mother spirit. 3. Augmenting vicegerent sovereignty, the advancing authority of a creator son during the period of his seven creature bestowals. 4. Supreme sovereignty, the settled authority following the completion of the seventh bestowal. In Nebadon, supreme sovereignty dates from the completion of Michael's bestowal on Urantia. It has existed just slightly over 1900 years of your planetary time. 5. Augmenting supreme sovereignty, the advanced relationship growing out of the settling of a majority of the creature domains in light and life. This stage pertains to the unachieved future of your local universe. 6. Trinitarian sovereignty, exercised subsequent to the settling of the entire local universe in light and life. 4. Unrevealed sovereignty, the unknown relationships of a future universe age.
Okay, a couple things to stress. I mean, it's, like I said, it's basically it's just a straightforward parallel to the evolutionary development of the universe of universes. You know, like we've stressed a number of times, and we'll see some more here going forward. Supreme sovereignty, you know, and literally, you know, not just we wanted a grandiose name, so we chose supreme. You know, it means literally. Literally, he now possesses a measure of supreme type deity. So he has supreme sovereignty. And then as you go forward, you know, and it gets that seventh one, and then, you know, recall how it started out. It said, the universe, local universe passes through six, perhaps seven. Why did they say perhaps seven? Well, nothing has gotten there yet, so they're going to have to. But you know, what's motivating them to suspect that there's a seventh?
There's always seven.
Well, there's that. But you know, what you discover is, you know, when you examine the details of things, there's always seven. Coincidentally, it's not because they love to just make lists of random lists of seven things and ignore the eighth thing or something, you know, right? So what is it that they're seeing a pattern, and they're going, well, if there's something connected to this and something connected to this, there must be something connected to this, and there must be something like that they're noticing. What is that? Well, I mean, if you think about, so if you look, you know, look at the psychic circles and the sevenfold, you know, you make him a master son, yeah, and he has supreme sovereignty. Okay, and then, so he's off to the races, and now what's going to happen? Well, Yeah, and you notice, that's one of the reasons I purposely put master, creator sons in this block, just to be able to reflect directly on them being master sons, in this context of the sevenfold. Okay, so he's a master son, and then he starts expanding his relationship to things from that initial point. Well, first of all, now that he's a master son, he has a newfound relationship with the level he's in that he didn't have before, that he has to achieve. A complete relationship there that wasn't possible when he was just a creator son. So he completes that master-son relationship to that, that zeroth, that first cosmic level. Not the zeroth, the first cosmic level. And so that's, augmenting supreme sovereignty. Okay. And then you have Trinitarian sovereignty, exercise of settling the entire local universe in light and life. Well, we've talked about that event a little bit. Remember how, when we were talking about the creative Mother Spirit, that you're slowly, in number five there, sort of lifting the whole local universe up until that womb of reality is up at the level of the super universe that it's in. And then it really kind of, in many ways, ceases to be separate and kind of just begins to blend in to the super universe. So number six is about really coming into blending into the individual super universe level. If I go up a notch, who do I have? I have the mothers of the super universe, the reflective mother spirits. So he's coming into a relationship with that level. So why do they think they're, because I there's another level before I get to the grand universe settled in light and life. There's another level in here before the supreme level. So they're saying, well, pretty sure there's going to be a number seven then. There's going to be a stage where there's going to be a sovereignty in play that goes beyond the individual super universe level and goes up to the collective super universe level. Not the grand universe level, but the collective super universe level, the level where you have the creative mother agencies as the womb of reality that encompasses all seven. So that's why they're thinking about this chart, their version of it, that has a third cosmic level before the supreme level, the fourth cosmic level. That's why number seven is there. Okay, so that's what they're getting at, and no one knows what that's going to be like, but they're pretty sure there's going to be something where these master sons are going to begin to take on some kind of a sovereignty that's really goes beyond their super universe. All of them, start to become, it really starts to become a universe of universes in a way that it isn't right now. It'll have a commonality across those borders that it doesn't have now.
So they'd be like co-sovereigns of all the universes?
Yeah, who knows? So you can start to speculate. Now that you kind of know, have some sense of what that's about, you could start to speculate about, well, what would that be like?
Maybe that could be why the ancients of days are gods.
And they're the complementary mothers, to the ancients of days are uniform,
right,
like them around, they're at the collective super universe level. Yeah.
Does the supreme eventually hand off to the creator sons? And leave the?
No, it goes the other way around.
Oh, I see.
See, so there's a stage seven, and then there's an eight, in a sense, or a new one, or whatever you want to say, when, we all transcend the finite, and they take on some new sovereignty role in an absonite sphere of influence. And there's that transition from the finite spheres of sovereignty to the absonite spheres of sovereignty, that transition of the supreme level. You know, so all of us through the Supreme Being, it will be, you know, from our perspective, experientially existent at that point, and hence can be the doorway through which all of us pass to the other side, to the absonite sphere of existence. All right, so that's just wanted to point out. See, that you can, you know, once you've gotten a few of the blanks filled in, you can begin to understand why they suspect some of these things. You know, it's often to say, "Well, we suspect such and so." And it's like, "Well, why do you suspect that?" You know, you can ask yourself, "Can I figure out why they suspect that?" I'll bet you the reason they told me they suspect it is because they've given me enough information in the revelation that I could eventually figure that out. If they didn't give me enough to figure that out, it would be pointless for them to mention it. You know, unless they're just trying to wow us with all kinds of, you know, meaningless mystical statements. Okay, you know, they're only giving us stuff that we're capable of developing an experiential relationship to. Might take a lot of work, but we can get there. We can begin to answer the question of why there's a number 7, for instance. All right.
In accepting the initial vicegerent sovereignty of a projected local universe, a creator Michael takes an oath to the Trinity not to assume supreme sovereignty until the 7 creature bestowals have been completed and certified by the super universe rulers. But if a Michael son could not at will assert such unearned sovereignty, there would be no meaning in taking an oath not to do so.
So now it's not just, you know, it's even closer parallel to the finality thing. You're not just getting consent. Now they're taking an oath, just like we take an oath. All right, so you see the very tight parallel. And again, it's the Trinity. That's who everyone's talking to. The Father often is just silently sitting there at the center.
keeping himself out.
Basically what he says, go talk to Mom. Mom's in charge.
Reinitiates. Go talk to your mom.
I made you exist. What else do you want from me?
Now go see Mom.
You could really take that to some bed.
Even in the pre-bestowal ages, a creator son rules his domain well nigh supremely when there is no dissent in any of its parts. Limited rulership would hardly be manifest if sovereignty were never challenged. The sovereignty exercised by a pre-bestowal creator son in a universe without rebellion is no greater than in a universe with rebellion. But in the first instance, sovereignty limitations are not apparent. In the second, they are.
We all know about their comments about that, about, you know, what he could and couldn't do prior to Pentecost.
If ever the authority or administration of a creator son is challenged, attacked, or jeopardized, he is eternally pledged to uphold, protect, defend, and, if necessary, retrieve his personal creation. Such sons can be troubled or harassed only by the creatures of their own making or by higher beings of their own choosing. It might be inferred that higher beings, those of origin on levels above a local universe, would be unlikely to trouble a creator son, and this is true. But they could if they chose to. Virtue is volitional with personality. Righteousness is not automatic in free will creatures.
Someone have an idea of why are they going to the trouble of laying that all, spelling that all out like that? Think about the last sentence.
Yeah. The first thing that occurred to me was how much like humans it is. You know, we are only troubled by the creatures of our own making or the ones we choose to see as above us.
Yeah, there's definitely that. the punchline is the last sentence. Virtue is volitional with personality. Righteousness is not automatic in free will creatures. Who preached otherwise? The God of Liberty.
Yes. Friend of men and angels.
The friend of men and angels. All right. He brought the good news that righteousness is automatic. You know, mind is innately divine. All right. you know, they're just reminding you again, just like they're, you know, like I had you fill in between the lines, because if he did do that, he would be in rebellion, you know, again, an Ancient of Days could choose to be in rebellion. They have that liberty. But they have true liberty, not false liberty, because they have a recognition of personal responsibility and a subsequent self-control. Not just a burning spiritual consciousness with a passion for liberty, which always leads to false liberty. You know, and quickly to assumptions like, well, spirit is innately, you know, divine, you know, and mind is connected to spirit, so mind is innately divine, and myself is a mindful self, so myself is innately divine, and, you know, and on you go. Okay.
Slippery slope.
Right. Yeah.
It only takes about 100 years.
Right. Free will is just that, free will, like they were stressing. Okay, yeah?
So a creator son really could rebel.
Yes.
And who would deal with it? Like, they would probably have to deal with it fast.
The Ancients of Days would deal with it. They deal with every...
They would probably just...
Yeah, it's a preemptive slope.
Yeah, like I said, everyone, you know, of the Trinity, you know, government would pull out of the local universe, and most likely the Ancients of Days would snuff it all out.
I would think
that local universe would probably cease to exist.
This piece is terminated. Yeah.
It wouldn't play out for long, I would
because
think.
He would pollute, you know, the whole.
Like, yeah, that would. See, so
there, there would be no salvation, I would think. I mean, it's
they'd
pretty
do
extreme.
It really fast. They wouldn't be able to let it play out like they are this.
But see, again, you can speculate, you know, and you know, and yes, you know, I mean, you know, he would only be committing a supreme, you know, negative act. I have an absolute dimension of my personality. I could stand strong in the face of his rebellion. You know, so you know, you can recognize that. In that thought experiment, the Ancients of Days wouldn't snuff out every personality in that local universe. But the local universe itself, you know, would be polluted in a way that would be irretrievable. That would be a very interesting thing to try to speculate on the details of.
I hope it never happens.
Right. Well, and it won't. Yeah, it won't. But just know,
really
you got to... Yeah, you have to allow it to be a possibility, or the next thought is Lucifer's first thought. That's the point they're trying to make. The moment that you think that that's literally impossible, not just virtually impossible, because of the facts, the moment you assume it's literally impossible, you're on the road to thinking that spirit is innately divine, you know, and doesn't need to be directed towards righteousness.
It would be logical. It would be a logical conclusion.
Right, yeah. You just don't, you have to allow the fullness of the liberty that God put in place. Another positive thing about allowing the fullness of the liberty that he laid out is it challenges you to go beyond mere faith, to trust.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You've got to trust here, okay?
There's always a remedy for anything.
The Ancients of Days could choose rebellion, okay? So do you trust or not? Okay? You know, you're not just going to have faith in a fairy tale that it's impossible, you know, or something like that, some wishful thinking kind of faith. You know, you know with absolute certitude that despite the fact that they could choose rebellion and destroy all of reality, they won't. You're going to bank on them. You're going to have soul trust. No real harm can befall me because, you know, he's saying that because he knows he can absolutely trust the Ancients of Days. Into your hands I commend my existence. Right? You know, he's not going to say screw all you guys. I've been given. I'm a creator being. I'm going to carve my own universe and protect myself from your potential, you know, rebellion. No. I mean, he's literally, you know, in his seventh bestowal, going to let go of everything and pour himself out onto the Paradise Trinity. And through the Mother, be reconsolidated. Okay? Complete trust, you know, in every fiber of his existence. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you've got to allow that so that you can challenge yourself to, you know, to get beyond, you know, pleasing tales, you know.
The thing I love about this paragraph is this little snippet. It says, "And if necessary, retrieve his personal creation."
Yeah, right. And really, they mentioned that, yeah, the retrievers, these Paradise Sons, you know.
Yeah.
They're serving as retrievers. Yeah.
I mean, it leads you to believe that if all else fails, he'll come back and fix it.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
That's why he gets the big bucks.
Right, I mean, it's the other side of the Most High's rule in the kingdoms of men. I mean, if push comes to shove with the big picture, the Most High's will step in and it will be as it should with an individual. I mean, you know, the other side, you know, the personal, individual side works the same way. They'll step in and do whatever, you know, needs to be done. The only thing that they can't retrieve is an absolute choice to not be retrievable. You know, if you choose to be absolutely unretrievable, then you're lost. But short of you choosing to absolutely be unretrievable, there is a retriever who can retrieve you from the greatest darkness.
Look what happened to one.
Golden retriever.
Exactly. The golden retriever. Amidon exercised the absolute dimension of his free will and faced the sophistry. Guess who noticed? Ancients of days. Yeah.
So, yeah, just, you know, they're yeah, in between the lines. Yeah, I just wanted you to see the kind of, you know, they're invoking between the lines the Lucifer rebellion and all the lessons you can learn and stuff, you know, and just, and trying to really get you into that state of recognition where you can begin to zero in on being sophistry proof, where you can cut through the fog of pleasing fables that think that you don't have to make a choice. There's nothing automatic about your relationship to eternity. If you don't choose it, you will lose it. God's not going to give you eternity by grace. You have to choose it.
Before the completion of a bestowal career, a creator son rules with certain self-imposed limitations of sovereignty. But subsequent to his finished bestowal service, he rules by virtue of his actual experience in the form and likeness of his manifold creatures. When a creator son has seven times sojourned among his creatures, when the bestowal career is finished, then is he supremely settled in universe authority.
So she sells by the seashore. Strange. Too many S's.
Then is he supremely settled in universe authority. He has become a master son, a sovereign and supreme ruler. The technique of obtaining supreme sovereignty over a local universe involves the following seven experiential steps.
Oh, you know, before we go into that, I should point out one word. Before the completion. Did you notice? Remember, that's a technical word.
Yeah.
Yes, remember, that's what we've been pointing out the whole paper so far, you know, that there's an initial perfection, but then he proceeds to go through, you know, a long series of completion steps, mm-hmm. trying to, you know, all the way up to the grand universe being settled in light and life. You know, there's a milestone in that completion sequence. Before the completion. Don't just let that be a word that describes it, you know, I mean, remember, think of it as a technical word, you know, a post-perfection phenomenon. So now we got another list of seven, and this is what I was hinting at up front. There's a fun little pattern in this list that we'll point out here.
I'll introduce this list again.
Yep.
The technique of obtaining supreme sovereignty over a local universe involves the following seven experiential steps. One, experientially to penetrate seven creature levels of being through the technique of incarnated bestowal in the very likeness of the creatures on the level concerned. Two, to make an experiential consecration to each phase of the sevenfold will of paradise deity as it is personified in the seven master spirits. Three, to traverse each of the seven experiences on the creature levels simultaneously with the execution of one of the seven consecrations to the will of paradise deity.
Before we read the others, let's just notice the pattern here. Okay, three things. Without noticing much of the details, you may have picked up talking about creature in the first one. When it's bringing in paradise deity, the creators, seven master spirits or creators, it's bringing creators. And then it's putting the two together in number three, simultaneously, okay, having one and two. Okay, so how did it start out? The technique of obtaining supreme sovereignty. And we know that's a literal thing. He has to acquire a measure of supreme type deity. What's that label up in the beginning of the foreword functional levels of total deity? What's that little label they give for supreme type deity? Remember?
It's
a hyphenated.
Oh, creature, creator, unifying deity.
Exactly. Creature, creator, unifying deity.
Give me the hints.
Is supreme type deity. Okay, that's one way to there's some deity in play, you can say, well, is it creature creator unifying? No, so it can't be supreme type deity, it must be another facet of deity. It's a way of figuring out if that flavor of deity is in play. Creature creator unifying, three words in that order, creature creator unifying. Number one, creature, number two, creator, number three, unifying. Okay. They're literally spelling it out, okay, in the order that they're putting it. Creature, creator, unifying. Okay?
Four, on each creature level, experientially, to portray the acme of creature life to paradise deity and to all universe intelligences. Five, on each creature level, experientially, to reveal one phase of the sevenfold will of deity to the bestowal level and to all the universe. Six, experientially to unify the sevenfold creature experience with the sevenfold experience of consecration to the revelation of the nature and will of deity.
Number six even has the word unify in it. Okay, there it is again, same order. Creature, creator, unifying. It can't be the same thing. Well, let's look at number seven, then let's try to figure out why they have two sets of creature, creator, unifying, and then a seventh thing.
Seven, to achieve new and higher relationship with the Supreme Being, the repercussion of the totality of this creator, creature experience augments the super universe reality of God the Supreme and the time-space sovereignty of the Almighty Supreme and factualizes the supreme local universe sovereignty of a Paradise Michael.
Okay. So they explicitly say supreme being. Okay. Now the individuality designation. And, when you're, from our perspective, from our temporal perspective, if they invoke the supreme being, that's that individual that you're thinking of being able to walking up to him and shaking hands and saying hi. Well, you can't do that right now. There is no such individual infinite experience. It's an absentite individual. You have to get to the absentite before you can walk up and shake hands and say hi. But right now we have power and personality that are synthesizing. When you get to the end, you have a power personality synthesis that's literally the supreme being. He is the power, personality, synthesis. Okay? So, you know, I kind of always, you know, when you see Supreme Being, kind of always keep that alternate, you know, expression in mind and ask yourself, does that have any direct relevance to what I'm reading here? Well, two things coming together. Power, personality. Power and personality coming together is a synthesis. Well, I mean, what's ways I could think about? What's kind of the, you know, a really kind of crude way of differentiating that which I would call personality from that which I would call power? Well, I mean, when I think of my genuine personal nature, that's an inner life fact. That's personal, right? That's an inner life fact. Power, well, you know, that's that stuff out there, okay? Purposed energy, power. Oh, wait a minute. Inner life, outer life. So I look at 1, 2, 3. It's the creature creator unifying, but see, that's inner life. See, look at 4, 5, 6. That's about manifesting something in the outer life. That's the difference between the two. One is inner life. First set is inner life, second is outer. First one's personality, the second one's power. Okay. You know, and you know, you can even think very precisely, you know, when you call him a power personality synthesis, you know, you're thinking that you have a root that's personal and then power is added to it. And of course, when you think about, you know, that's, you know, the mother, we're going to say the Supreme Being, so let's think of it as you have the universal mother, and then the Almighty Supreme is added to that. You know, the universal mother comes down, you know, God the Mother comes down, you know, God the Almighty comes up, you know, added to that. So it's personality is the root, power is the same. So it's a power personality synthesis, or it's an integration of the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme into the Supreme Being. Okay? You know, and so, you know, they start with the root, the first three, and then they, what you add to that, the second three, and then 7 is the synthesis. Right? Okay? And look at what they did there in number 7. When we're talking about a creator son, they start out as creator, and then creatures added to that. It's creature, creator, hyphen creator, you know, unifying deity.
Creature.
No. You start with creator. Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about the creator son, not the Supreme Being. But just notice what Don was noticing. It's in the other order in number 7 here. Creator, creature. Oh, yeah, and look what they're talking about. They're talking about the reciprocal relationship between the two. That the creator son getting, you know, augmenting his nature with creature, creator, there is a reflection in the Supreme of creator, creature. Why would you think of, you know, literally the Supreme Being as being creator, creature? Well, you might say, I was using the kind of the reciprocal or the reflection. I guess in a sense I could think of some picture in the finite being reflected, you know, into the absentite, you know, and the two words flipping. I could think about it in some way like that. But think about what they tell you about the Supreme Being, you know, not the flavor of deity called the Supreme, but that being, the Supreme Being. Does he start out doing creator things? No. Remember, they tell you he's basically the only time he's ever done the creator thing was making Majestan.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, sort of as a root, he's creature, and then they're thinking the creator is slowly being added to that. See, it's creator creature nature. You know, and but in here, you know, in the case of the Supreme Being, that that creature, quote unquote, nature, that's that summation. You know, there's all the creatures of the finite, all the individual creatures, and the Almighty Supreme, which is really kind of the creature part, okay, you know, is a reflection of the summation of all those creatures. Okay, the two are, you know, are reflect one another. So, and then you're crowning that with, you know, that summation nature, you're crowning that with a personalization and making it a full-blown creator, the Supreme Being. Okay? And then, so if you see that sentence, see, they're going back and forth, reminding you of how the two are go hand in hand. That to achieve new and higher relationship with the Supreme Being, okay, is this one thing. Okay, well, if he does that, then he acquires some supreme type deity, you know, because it's a literal relationship. In order to have that relationship, he's got to be like, you know, the Supreme Being in some way. So he acquires literal. So they're suggesting that he's literally acquiring the ability to have a direct relationship with the Supreme Being. He has supreme type deity. Then it says the repercussion of the totality of this creator creature experience augments the super universe reality of God the Supreme. Yeah, so thinking about it the other direction, you know, and the time space sovereignty of the Almighty Supreme, you know, just kind of thinking about the details, and factualizes the supreme local universe sovereignty of a Paradise Michael, flipping it back again. So just, you know, just trying to balance it back and forth so that you can, you know, they go hand in hand. They're one and the same thing. That's why they call them supreme creator personalities, remember, because they're intimately involved in creating the supreme through this this reciprocal relationship like this.
So by letting go of his creator nature, he becomes a creature and achieves a state whereby the creator is added to creature, so which is the supreme type nature. Is that right?
Well, I mean, you know, which are you talking about? You know, are you talking about what's happening with the Supreme, a way of thinking about what's happening with the Supreme Being, or what's happening with Michael?
What's happening
with Michael? He has a fundamental creator nature, right, which came from the outside, which came from existential deity. Okay, and so not too surprising that he could choose to not have that manifest. Right, he lays it down. All right, so it's no longer, he's no longer going to manifest as a creator. He can be a true creature, not a faux creature. You know, a creator masquerading as a creature. Okay, he's going to be a true creature because he's going to choose to no longer let that transcendental nature, you know, that's related to the outside, manifest on the inside here. So it's not in play at all. A true creature coalesces, via the hand of the Paradise Trinity, just like every creature coalesces. And once that's completed, he then can bring the foundation back there, and, you know, and bond this new thing to that foundation. But from the reciprocal perspective, you know, as a supreme creator, what does that do in making the supreme being? You know, there you've got, you know, the fact that he becomes a creature, that is reflected in the summation, in the Almighty Supreme. That augments the Almighty Supreme, like they're saying here, you know, that in the time-space sovereignty of the Almighty Supreme, that adds to the Almighty Supreme, to the summation. In fact, there's another creature. It means the summation is greater. Okay? And when he remanifests, when Michael remanifest the creator part in it, that then will add creator nature to that foundation of creature in the Supreme Being. So kind of what you were saying. See, so there's this, it depends on which way you look at it, you know, and just appreciating that the Supreme growing, you know, and Michael growing are really the same thing looked at from two different ways. You know, or literally, if you just, you know, take the words creator and creature, I mean, you know, if you look at it this way, it's, you know, I see creature first and creator second. If I turn around like this, I see creator first and creature second. I mean, you know, it's just, you can think of it that literally. Depends on how you look at it. Whether or not you're seeing the individual that we call the Master Son, or part of the individual that we call the Supreme Being. It's actually the same thing from two different perspectives. And from an individuality view, purely individuality view, that's pretty confusing. It's like, well, I mean, it's not like it's, you know, aren't they separate individuals or separate personalities? Yes, they are. But remember the unity viewpoint, the deity viewpoint. Fundamental quality of deity is unity. From a unity viewpoint, it's all one. You know, for instance, like if you use those unity designations like God the Supreme, you know, you have one God from a purely unity viewpoint with many facets. There's one crystal with many sides, you know. Like, you know, a crystal you gave me that one time. Right? I mean, and in each one of those facets, you know, you look at this facet, it's God the Supreme. This facet's God the Father. This one's God the Mother. This one's God the Sevenfold, etc. But there's the fundamental quality of deity is unity. There's one God. See, so in that, when you think about it like that, in a sense, you're really looking at the same thing from two different sides. Is it a Master Son, or is it the Supreme Being? You know, is it God the Sevenfold, or is it God the Supreme? Yes and no. Yeah. It, you know, and it's not just illusion. I mean, the individuality viewpoint and the unity viewpoint are both literal, you know, and both valid. That's the complexity of the fifth epical revelation, to try to teach us this fact. You know, rather than just having an individuality viewpoint with exalted individuals, anthropomorphisms, that we call God. You know, the actual fact of God starts with unity, and there are no individuals. And it's a very different way to think about things. You know, it seems kind of Eastern, right? Like an Eastern religious sort of viewpoint, rather than the Western religion. You know. So what they're telling you is, well, you know, there's a measure of truth in the Western viewpoint and a measure of truth in the... Neither are the whole. Each are two valid ways of looking at the same thing. There is unity and there is individuality simultaneously. Okay, so that's what you get. So you have creature, creator, unifying, power, personality, synthesis. That's the way they constructed this seven.
In settling the question of sovereignty in a local universe, the Creator Son is not only demonstrating his own fitness to rule, but is also revealing the nature and portraying the sevenfold attitude of the paradise deities. The finite understanding and creature appreciation of the Father's primacy is concerned in the adventure of a Creator Son when he condescends to take upon himself the form and experiences of his creatures. These primary paradise sons are the real revealers of the Father's loving nature and beneficent authority, the same Father who, in association with the Son and the Spirit, is the universal head of all power, personality, and government throughout all the universal realms.
We'll get to that significant thing at the end there. Just notice in passing, a little reminder here, when we're talking about the seven bestowals, or we're talking about the seven master spirits, remember we're not talking about the threefold attitude of the paradise deities when we talk about the first master spirit, for instance, you know, expressing the Father. That's not the threefold expression of the Father. That's the sevenfold expression of the Father. It's lesser. Okay. Same, you know. So when you go around the seven master universe, or seven super universes, or you go through the seven master spirits, or you go through the seven bestowals. When you're thinking of the seventh bestowal, and he's revealing the Father. He's not revealing the one-fold Father. He's not revealing the three-fold Father. He's revealing the seven-fold Father. He's revealing the Father as expressed like the first master spirit. Not the full, fire hose of the Father. A downstepped expression of the Father. So that's why they keep saying that sevenfold attitude. Look at the end there. These primary paradise sons are the real revealers of the Father's loving nature and beneficent authority. The same Father who, in association with the Son and the Spirit. So before you go any further, just notice how they didn't say the same universal Father who, in association with the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit. They very purposely just used the deity, not the individuality names, but the deity names. So you have the facet of deity called the Father, the facet of deity called the Son, and the facet of deity called the Spirit. That threefold relationship, in parallel to that, you have they're invoking this recognition of the nature of the Father as the universal head of all power, personality, and government. It's like, well, okay, it must be in the order that they have it. I mean, power must go with the Father, personality with the Son, and government with the Spirit. Can I understand that much of it? It's like, well, who is, directly behind the non-personal fact of the aisle? The Father. So it's like, okay, I can kind of see how power has a closer connection to the Father. Who's the absolute personality? Or I should say it the other way around. The personality absolute. Who's the personality absolute? The eternal Son. Okay, so now government tied to the third person or that. It's like, well, how can I think about that? Remember how when they talk about you have the thought of the Father, the word of the Son, the God of action. Yeah. They speak of him as the conjoint executive. Remember they used that expression, calling him the executive? Well, that's kind of a government-like word. That seems like I'm getting close. Okay. And then think about, I often talk about love, mercy, ministry. And I put the word ministry to the third person. The head of a parliamentary government is called what? A prime minister. See, I don't know if you ever thought about it. Okay, there's a connection there that they want you to recognize. Between the third person and government. Okay, ministering, being the executive of all executives. I mean, there's the seven supreme executives. Then there's the executive. Okay, the conjoint executive. So they're invoking that, but then, like I said, that's kind of an aside. They're saying the facets of deity, and they're saying the same Father who is the universal head over a threefold pattern of power, personality, and government. Universal head. The facet of deity called the Father, we can understand it as being sixfold. We've got the first center, we have the first source, we have the infinite upholder. We've got some facets that have the adjective universal, don't we? Like the universal Father, universal Creator, universal Controller. Mm-hmm. It says universal head. Do you suppose they mean literally? I should think about which facets that are called universal go with power, personality, and government? Yeah, of course they do. So, the same Father who is the universal head of all power. When you're talking about the Father as the universal head of all power, what facet of the Father is that called? Control. The universal controller. That's the Father as the universal head of all power. What's the designation for the Father as the universal head of all personality?
Creator.
Mm-hmm.
Father. Universal Father. Trick question. Mm, yeah. Or.
Trick question.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a trick question. And this is why, notice that they, like I said, they have the facets of deity. You know, you can actually just look on the chart and answer the question. You know, if they're invoking the facet of deity that's called the Son, which facet of the Father is in direct association with it? You know, in the third functional level, the universal Father. So, which one is associated with the Spirit? Universal Creator. Okay. Yeah, and the Universal Controller. Okay. See those. So yeah, they're just seeing it. You know, for those who want to think about the details, they're saying, you know, those three universals, you can line them up. You know, there's kind of what the Father does directly in relationship to the Isle and the Universal Controller. You know, and here we've broken this one out too. And you know when you're looking at the, you know, the psychic circles in the sevenfold, and you're looking at these sevenfold controllers, there's the Isle of Paradise, and who's behind the Isle of Paradise? The Universal Controller, right? Yeah. So that first one's the Universal Controller, the second one's the Universal Father, and the third one's the Universal Creator. Because the Universal Creator is what's directly associated with the facet of deity called the Spirit on that functional level. You know, like, go back to the beginning of the forward again, you know, and there's pairs on each level. They're just invoking those pairs on those three functional levels. Okay, so there's all kinds of fun, you know, details they've woven in. You know you're going to have a lot of details like that when you glance down at a section and you see lists, numbered lists. You know they want you to go into a mode where you're dissecting things quite a bit. You know, it's not, the main modus operandi is not going to be grand poetry. Grand poetry and a numbered list are kind of, you know, at odds with one another. Yeah. So you have to allow your material consciousness to have a moment to notice all kinds of little details and sort it out and think about it. But then when you do that, you notice all these fun patterns that your unity consciousness is not going to notice. You know, it's looking for poetry. Doesn't really find any. Doesn't even remember this section is in the book. Okay, your spiritual consciousness, you know, forgets about this section because it just isn't poetic. But your individuality consciousness can notice the details, see these really cool patterns, and discover a beauty that you didn't know a lot, you know, was in that section. And then the section is not so forgettable anymore because beauty is memorable. So you find some beauty in here, and you find some goodness with your spiritual consciousness in another place, and you put the two together, and truth starts to flow, and you're actually starting to experience the truth of the revelation, and not just the goodness, which means you know not the truth. Okay, let's do some Michael bestowals.
For the Michael bestowals, there are seven groups of bestowal creator sons, and they are so classified in accordance with the number of times they have bestowed themselves upon the creatures of their realms. They range from the initial experience up through five additional spheres of progressive bestowal until they attain the seventh and final episode of creature creator experience.
Ah, they wait until you're done before they actually wrote it. See,
yeah. They reversed it.
See, now, you know, because we're talking about, you know, him getting supreme type deity, creature creator, unifying deity, having, you know, creature creator experience. That was, you know, yeah, they were chuckling when they did that. You know, it's like, and I'm going to see if they can remember it. And then after they should have figured it out, I'll state it in black and white. You know, they could have stuck that designation up, you know, at some other spot when they said experience, but they wait until afterwards, you know, because they're hoping that you can start to get it without the hint.
Avonal bestowals are always in the likeness of mortal flesh, but the seven bestowals of a creator son involve his appearing on seven creature levels of being and pertain to the revelation of the seven primary expressions of the will and nature of deity. Without exception, all creator sons pass through this seven times giving of themselves to their created children before they assume settled and supreme jurisdiction over the universes of their own creation. Though these seven bestowals vary in the different sectors and universes, they always embrace the mortal bestowal adventure. In the final bestowal, a creator son appears as a member of one of the higher mortal races on some inhabited world, usually as a member of that racial group which contains the largest hereditary legacy of the Adamic stock, which has previously been imported to upstep the physical status of the animal origin peoples. Only once in his sevenfold career as a bestowal son is a Paradise Michael born of a woman, as you have the record of the Babe of Bethlehem. Only once does he live and die as a member of the lowest order of evolutionary will creatures.
Okay, just a little quick. Though these seven bestowals vary in the different sectors and universes, as soon as you read that, what were our seven again? Can anyone tell me what the first bestowal he incarnated as? What type of being?
Melchizedek.
As the second, what type?
Barandadek.
Nope.
As an ancient of days at one time.
No. It can't be God.
Sarah.
He's a creature, remember, he's got to be a creature. The first ones you can start to remember, but you have the hierarchy of sons. You have Melchizedek, Barandadek, Lenanadek, life carrier, material son. So think about that sequence.
He was universal.
But think about, how many? Melchizedek, Barandadek, Lenanadek, life carrier, material, that's five. That's too many for those first few. So he must have skipped some, okay? So if you think about him, which ones did he skip? He did Melchizedek, but he skips Verondadek because they're the most high. See, in some senses, they're actually above him, so he's not condescending there. Okay? He skips the Verondadek, so the second bestowal is as a
Lenanadek.
Okay, now, so I got two left. I got Life Carrier and Material Son. Which one do you think he skips?
Life carrier.
He skips life carrier. Can you think about why he might skip the life carrier again? If he's trying to condescend, why would he skip life carrier?
They're associated with ancients.
One of their creators is an ancient of days. Again, that's above him.
Right.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. So it's actually very logical which two he skips. He skips the two that are in some ways above him, even though they're his children. So the third one is as a material son. So then can you remember the fourth one? So if he did the sons in those first three, what does he do in the fourth one?
Yes, an angel.
Seraphim. Okay, so there you've got the his sort of immediate children like ones, plus the children of the created mother spirit, the seraphim. So those are the first four. And then the last three are the ascending ones. Okay, so five is what?
He's on Universa.
He's on Universa. It's a third stage spirit. All right, so it's an ascender as a third stage spirit.
Right.
Six is an ascender as?
Marantia
Progressor. Marantia Progressor. And specifically, it's at what level in the Marantia Progressions did he pick?
He's
the constellation level, right there in the middle. Okay, and then of course seven is here. Okay, so when they give you something like that, they're kind of serving up a little opportunity to quiz yourself, see if you can remember them.
I hate quizzes.
You're reading into that, and they come right out and directly state something that should be a challenge to any sort of immature spiritual consciousness. It says, in the final bestowal, the Creator Son appears as a member of one of the higher mortal races on some inhabited world, usually as a member of that racial group which contains the largest hereditary legacy of the Adamic stock, which has previously been imported to upstep the physical status of the animal origin peoples. Okay, an immature spiritual consciousness goes, well, that's pretty elitist.
Pretty normal.
But see, just notice how, that's politically incorrect. That's a politically incorrect statement. You know, in the modern, immature spiritual consciousness of our world, you know, we've decided the opposite, you know, that we're always falsely exalting, you know. No. And what does the fifth epic of Revelation tell us? No, there's a hierarchy. And Adamic stock is above evolutionary stock. It's not because someone is being biased or even racist.
Or elitist.
Or elitist. It's just a fact. And you know, so you know, there's a little challenge there between the lines. To accept the hierarchy. Don't, you know, be looking for, if you get a little twinge, those little twinges need to be addressed, because those are the twinges that, you know, Lucifer started with.
Yeah.
Lucifer, you know, felt uncomfortable with the hierarchy. You know, catch when your immature spiritual consciousness doesn't like things being put vertically. You know, putting some human above another human or something like that. You know, you know, and challenge it to think it anew. You know, you don't embrace the false hierarchy, you know, that people like to establish, you know, false absolutes and whatnot. You know, challenge yourself to find the truth in the hierarchy, and the indispensableness of the hierarchy. Humble yourself in the hierarchy, you know, unlike Lucifer did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... and of course, we talked a lot about Born of Woman back in talking about Bestol before, so they're just reminding us of that whole conversation there, too.
After each of his bestowals, a Creator Son proceeds to the right hand of the Father, there to gain the Father's acceptance of the bestowal and to receive instruction preparatory to the next episode of Universe Service. Following the seventh and final bestowal, a Creator Son receives from the Universal Father supreme authority and jurisdiction over his universe.
A couple of things, a little quiz. Right hand of the Father, otherwise known as?
The Son.
The Eternal Son. Yes. Right. Technically, he's going to engage the Son. And through the Son, he engages the Father. Right. And when it says, there to gain the Father's acceptance of the soul and to receive instruction preparatory to the next episode of Universe Service. It's like, well, wait a minute, I thought he was perfect. Why would he need to receive instruction? Yeah, he's perfect, but he's not...
complete.
Not complete.
Not smart.
He doesn't have a full relationship to the whole yet. He has a relationship to the Father by default. Right. Right. Just notice it every time. It's, you know, I mean, we all know he went through all kinds of instruction in Havana before he came out, because, you know, he's born, you know, as incomplete as, you know, as possible, and has a whole bunch of completeness that he has to achieve before he even has the requisite nature to even go out. You know, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the nature, you know, the moment he's birthed out of you know, the Father and the Son, to just waltz out. I mean, he's inadequate. He would fail. He's not, he's incomplete. He's perfect, but he's inadequate. You know, and just, you know, and like we've pointed out a couple times recently, we're talking God here. You know, remind yourself of that. God is incomplete here. This is an expression of God incomplete. There's nothing. God the Father is not an expression of God the incomplete in any way, shape, or form. But the Creator Son is a very definitive expression as, what does God look like incomplete? You ever wondered, you know, if you ever asked, I wonder what God would look like if he was expressed incompletely? Look to a Creator Son. but look quickly, because he's working on the completeness. Okay?
He's, you know, not stuck.
He's getting less complete all the time. Or less incomplete all the time. I mean, you know, more and more complete all the time.
Yeah. It is of record that the Divine Son of last appearance on your planet was a Paradise Creator Son who had completed six phases of his bestowal career. Consequently, when he gave up the conscious grasp of the incarnated life on Urantia, he could and did truly say, "It is finished." It was literally finished. His death on Urantia completed his bestowal career. It was the last step in fulfilling the sacred oath of a Paradise Creator Son. And when this experience has been acquired, such sons are supreme universe sovereigns. No longer do they rule as vicegerents of the Father, but in their own right and name as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. With certain stated exceptions, these sevenfold bestowal sons are unqualifiedly supreme in the universes of their abode. Concerning his local universe, all power in heaven and on earth was relegated to this triumphant and enthroned Master Son.
A couple things in there. One, the initial fun thing. Yeah. So, yeah, who do we have writing this? Oh, yeah, that's right, a perfecter of wisdom. And just, you know, think about what he's doing there. So he's given this assignment. He goes, okay, I'm supposed to write something, you know, for people on what planet again? So he goes and looks us up. He's like, okay, so they've gotten a Paradise Creator Son. You know what I mean? I mean, see between the lines there of how, yeah, we think this is the greatest thing that there ever was. You know, for him, it's like he's got to go look it up in some old dusty book, blow it off, and figure out what the heck is going on 606 of Zidania, you know. Okay, so they got a Creator Son. He's like, yeah, we got a Creator Son. You know, you just look at the contrast between how we think about it and how he sees it.
Explanation for dummies.
You know, he doesn't say we, and we all, as we all know, you know, the last divine Son. You know, no, it is of a record. Okay, and then the other thing, when they invoke King of Kings and Lord of Lords. It's one of those examples where everyone, no one, almost no one is a student of the Bible anymore outside of, you know, a core group of Christians who really take the Bible seriously still. You know, it used to be just about everyone knew the Bible quite well, you know, and when you're writing a book like this, the authors can expect the audience to know the allusions of various references to the Bible. Okay? I'm suspecting that that's probably not happening in the room, so let me bring that out.
I thought it was a Christmas carol.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, that was the first thing we think of. King of Kings. Actually, what's that from? Handel's Messiah. Yeah.
Right.
But where did Handel get it from? He got it from the 19th chapter of Revelation. Okay. And that's right in the midst of another very famous statement immediately preceding and following those words, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, is, mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord, right? He's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He's loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. That's what that sentence... That,
great song.
That's what King of Kings and Lords of Lords is about. It's not about you know, sunshine and lollipops. Okay, it's about the grapes of wrath and the fateful lightning of the terrible swift sword of the Spirit of Truth. Remember, we've talked about this many times. Coming to terms with the actual fact of the Spirit of Truth. You know, that it's that double-edged sword that comes out of the mouth of Michael and that imagery in the book of Revelation. It's a double-edged sword, and it does what Jesus told us it does. It cleaves families in two. It divides families into those who know the truth and those who don't. And those who don't have that whole grapes of wrath thing. Right? The truth is not in them. They're cut from the vine and cast into the fire. That imagery. That immediately follows giving us the cosmic fruits of the Spirit up there in the Phoenician appearance, you know, in the Jesus papers. So what are they reminding you of? that he's, you know, and he's been given all power in heaven and on earth. You know, no longer do they rule as vicegerents of the Father, but in their own right. Mine eyes have seen the glory. Right? They're reminding you that what's now in play. That at some point the shoe's going to drop. And we've talked about this many times. And it's up to us about how this plays out. At some point he will demand that his supreme sovereignty is manifest here on this planet. And we have a choice of how that comes about. Does it come about via the angels of the trumpets? You know, and all the stuff that they're talking about, and the, you know, around that passage I just reminded you in Revelation? Or does it happen, you know, in a much less harsh way? You know, is it going to be the Most High's way? The ones that he didn't, you know, bestow himself as, who are really the Most High, who are really above him, and, you know, really are direct expressions of the Ancients of Days? The Judges, capital J, is it going to be their way? The Veronidex and the Ancients of Days and their trumpeteers, you know, the Angels of Nation Life? Or is it going to be another way? It's up to us. But it will come to pass, you know, that supreme sovereignty will be manifest. It's not going to go on without his supreme sovereignty reigning here on earth forever. And supreme sovereignty is supreme sovereignty. It's not vicegerent, you know, qualified, well, I can't really do anything because I'm just a vicegerent, you know, like they were reminding us of.
Wait for orders.
Yeah.
He says, settled in surety, your world is settled in surety.
At some point he lays down the law, and he does what even the Bible recorded about the Spirit of Truth. You know, he says, I didn't come to bring peace on earth. I came to bestow the Spirit of Truth. And it's a double-edged sword. Until we cleave mankind in two with the Spirit of Truth, there cannot be peace on earth. I can't be the Prince of Peace until first I bestow the Spirit of Truth, and it cleanses you one way or another. You can either choose to begin to incorporate in your life, take delight in cultivating, you know, and having the Spirit of Truth and the Thought Adjuster augment and make you a high conscious citizen, you know, in the cosmos, and we manifest that in our civilization, and things go the nicer way, or right, it'll go the other way.
The trumpet band.
Right. It'll go like the Sistine Chapel.
Likelihood won't be both.
I would be afraid that my fundamentalist friends, hearing what you just said, would say that that confirms their concept that unless I accept the blood of Jesus in this life, I won't mm-hmm. be resurrected. So mm-hmm. yeah. I always like to clarify that it's not, you will be resurrected.
See, and that's that inability to distinguish the two things we just talked about, the inner life from the outer life. We're not talking about the inner life. This whole discussion, what they're invoking out of the Book of Revelation, has nothing to do with the inner life. It has nothing to do with your individual salvation. You know, the angels of the trumpets don't blow anything because of someone's inner life.
But how do you...
Okay, it has nothing to do with the inner life. It's yeah. about the outer life. It has to do with civilization.
But that would be misunderstood.
Yes, it would be.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, one of the reasons I'm stressing this is for everyone, no one has any illusions. There are many things in this book that are nothing but problem for misinterpretation in ignorant, immature hands. Like I pointed out, when we read the Master Seraphim, it doesn't say these angels are kind of a parallel or similar to the angels of the trumpets. It says these are the angels of the trumpets. You know, in other words, you know that most extreme thought you've ever had, the most extreme story you've ever dreamt up, it's not all a fairy tale. There are literally angels who are those angels of the trumpets in your story, who sometimes herald the days of the Most High Regent and the Executioner of the Ancients of Days, wielding the Master Physical Controllers, doing things that even the Revelators cock their heads at. Remember that passage, you know, about the Universe Conciliators?
Yeah.
It's like, boy, sometimes they do things that apparently they've got the sanction to do that. wow. Shocking for even the experienced people in the universe. I mean, right? This is just trying to. God will not be mocked. I mean, you have absolute free will, but not over the outer life. Only over the inner life. You know, and when you start screwing up the outer life with a screwed up inner life, there comes a point where the Most High's are ruling the kingdoms of men. They're going to put an end to that. Okay. You know, in the same way that it comes to a quick end when you're resurrected on the first mansion world with all kinds of notions how you're going to teach them better government techniques that you learned, you know, in university, you know, here on Earth, and they say, oh, isn't that special? I mean, you have no say over the government on the mansion world, okay? You can form or die.
Right? Even though you're
cute,
darling.
Right.
Right.
Right. It's like, we have all these kind of these false notions that the Lucifer Rebellion has put in our heads that we somehow have the right, you know, to rule the outer domain. No. No. The Most High is ruling the kings of men. That's a very, very different story than has ever been told. What's being told in the fifth epic of Revelation? It's just, you can't figure that out with the book of Revelation. You can't figure that out with, you know, with any. I mean, there's shades of truth in the book of Revelation. There's shades of truth here, there, and everywhere. They're trying to sort that all out and get it clear. So you face the facts of what's in play. Your inner life. It's been taken care of 2,000 years ago. Unless you're just totally hopeless. I mean, there's no issue anymore. You get a soul and an adjuster by grace. You don't have to make a single choice. Okay? Used to be, if you didn't get one by, as a 6-year-old, if your parents didn't have adjusters, you had to do, supreme choice, basically, to even have any hope of surviving. You didn't get a soul by grace. You died. now everyone, you can be the most selfish, greedy, whatever person that ever lived, and you have a soul. The inner life thing, in terms of that basic starting, is done. All of the old rules were changed forever by Michael. He changed all the old rules about salvation. Because that basic inner life thing, that initial part is a done deal, then the fifth epic of Revelation is here to tell us, okay, let's go to the next story. Okay, there's not just inner lives. There's also outer lives. And they have significant elements in play too. They're not just irrelevant. The planet is not just about you and your salvation. The planet is about a deep future of light and life and stuff, and when you're long gone, and someone is watching over that issue, and they tell you that the people that really fundamentally bottom line watch over that issue of the big picture take no account of individuals. The Most High Observer knows not that I'm an individual with feelings and yearnings and desires. If he, I might get stepped on if he has to act. I now know that with absolute certitude. And so I know I need to be like Job. I know that I need that even though he slay me, yet will I serve him. His hand, the Most High, might slay me tomorrow for the greater good, but I'm still going to serve him even as I die. Okay, it's not just that soaring, passage from Handel's Messiah. It's the 19th chapter of Revelation, you know, and it's that passage, you know, the fateful lightning passage.
Creator's sons, subsequent to the completion of their bestowal careers, are reckoned as a separate order, sevenfold master sons. In person, the master sons are identical with the creator sons, but they have undergone such a unique bestowal experience that they are commonly regarded as a different order. When a creator deigns to effect a bestowal, a real and permanent change is destined to take place. True, the bestowal son is still and nonetheless a creator, but he has added to his nature the experience of a creature, which forever removes him from the divine level of a creator son and elevates him to the experiential plane of a master son, one who has fully earned the right to rule a universe and administer its worlds. Such beings embody all that can be secured from divine parentage and embrace everything to be derived from perfected creature experience. Why should man bemoan his lowly origin and enforced evolutionary career when the very gods must pass through an equivalent experience before they are accounted experientially worthy and competent, finally and fully, to rule over their universe domains?
Exclamation.
Exclamation.
Yes. Why? They ask us. You notice how literally they, you know, you could visualize, I've got the word creator, and then I add the word creature to it, you know, with a hyphen, you know, they were just describing that right there. And, you know, and again, think about, he starts out as a creator son, he's perfect, how could you go up from there? I just said that a master son is above, it elevates him to the experiential plane, okay, of a master son. All of experiential reality is an augmentation of what God the Father has. It's greater than him. Now, he's merely existential. He's like, well, but he's infinite. Yeah, but he's nothing but existential. You know, the closest he gets to experiential is self-experiential deity, you know, the infinite upholder. That's as close as he gets, which is still existential. You know, to see it the other way around, you know, to see the glory of the Father as merely a beginning, and that you're part of adding to that. You're part of what can come into existence if you don't just have God the infinite, i.e., you know, that core thing we call God the Father. Okay, you know, you don't just have the I am. The I am is missing something. It's infinite, but it's missing something. It's missing an infinite thing. It's missing the infinite all are. The totality of the experiential. Okay. And so, it's such a different perspective. You know, when you see yourself as a Trinity origin being, like we've been talking about, see, and that the Trinity is the means of adding to the Father. That thing that's on the other side from the first center, the other side, as far, you know, in many ways, far removed from the Father as you can get.
Is that the Supreme Being?
The Universal One of Infinity.
I know, but the way the Father achieves the experiential and adds it to himself, how does the Supreme Being
right,
get
into right.
it?
Okay, yeah, so think about it like that. You can call the Supreme Being the Supreme Father.
Okay.
Okay. You know, in the concept of the I Am, there is no expression of the Father as supreme. There's only the expression of the Father as infinite, essentially. Okay? So adding the Supreme Father to the Absolute Father is an addition.
Right.
It's more of the Father. The Supreme Being is a revelation of the Father that God the Father in and of himself is incapable of expressing. Through a long, complicated process, more of the Father becomes manifest. Yeah, that is not just manifest by fiat. Yeah, and the only way to get that part of the Father manifest is through the Mother. Now, the personal, spiritual aspect of the Supreme comes from the Trinity, yeah, through the Mother. That's the God the Mother part of God the Supreme. You add the God the Almighty part to the God the Mother part, and you end up with God the Supreme, or as an individual, the Supreme Being. You add the universe, you take the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme, you integrate them as the Supreme Being. So there's a personal purposive part, there's a power pattern part. You integrate the two, you have a power personality synthesis. You integrate the Universal Mother and the Almighty Supreme, you get the Supreme Being. And then one way to think about what that Supreme Being is, he's the Supreme One. He's the Supreme Father. Okay. So it's a Father that has never before been seen until that time. Long as it lay hidden, okay? In the midst, you know, from a seven absolutes infinity viewpoint, long as it lay hidden in the mists of the three absolutes. And finally it was unshrouded and manifest. And you can walk up to that aspect of the Father and shake hands with it and say hi. You can't go to the Isle of Paradise and do that. You can only shake hands with the Infinite Father in the Isle of Paradise. You can't shake hands with the Supreme Father. Yeah. there's a whole bunch of different, you know, things that you can think about that's going on there. All right, so let's see. Was there? I got kind of off on a sidetrack. There was there anything else in there that we needed to? Again, subsequent to the completion, you know, just stressing. You know, just see that word as a stronger word than you've ever thought about it. It isn't just the word completion. It's, you know, see, it is that technical word. And when they say. They are commonly regarded as a different order. You know, they've undergone such a unique, you know, I mean, you know, the, I mean, once you're thinking in deity terms, it's just, that, and that's the literalness of it. You've literally added supreme type deity to their self. You know, and like they said, in person, the Master Sons are identical to the Creator Sons. It's the same personality, but that personality is now wrapped around three different flavors of deity instead of two. It's different personalized deity. It's a different God. It's a different expression of personalized deity. It's now a Master Son. Yeah. So, yeah, that they're just trying to, you know, they're trying to get you. These sorts of things in the book are really trying to get you in this mode where you think very literally about everything. You know, it's not just a designation for convenience. It's indicating something literal. Everything in the book is indicating something literal. And the more you can start to think in that literal way, the more you can kind of really begin to unpack what's going on. Yeah. All right. Let's see. We'll finish up this paper, I suppose, next time and start rolling into the Trinitized Sons. Yep.
Well, back in paragraph 2, the first sentence.
Paragraph 2, okay.
The second, well, it says, a Creator Son, the seven bestowals of a Creator Son involve his appearing on seven creature levels of being and pertain to the revelation of the seven primary expressions of the will and nature of deity.
Yeah.
Would that be deity, sevenfold deity they're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, there's numbers one and two here. Yeah.
So that would be... Divinely,
the seven master spirits, the seven associative expressions, the Father, you know, you have the Father, the Son, the Spirit, the Father, Son, the Father, Spirit, the Son, Spirit, and the Father, Son, Spirit. Those, that sevenfold expression of deity.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, just like I said, to make an experiential consecration to each phase of the sevenfold will of paradise deity as it is personified in the seven master spirits. You know, you have seven different flavors of deity that are personalized deity there. Seven gods. And he's not manifesting the will of, you know, of directly of the infinite Father. He's manifesting the will as it is personified in Master Spirit number one.
Okay.
See, is technically what he's doing in the seventh bestowal. Because that's the only will of the Father that is directly manifestable in the finite. The other stuff is not manifestable. It transcends the finite. You know, even the will of the Supreme Father transcends the finite. You know, he's technically an absentite being. So, yeah, it's that's why I stress that up front, because that's often misunderstood. You're sort of over interpreting when he's saying, when he says, "He who has seen me has seen the Father." Well, just the part of the Father that's seeable in the finite, not all of the Father. If that was the case, the moment that you walked up to Jesus, you'd be made a fifth stage spirit, as if you had just completed the third circuit of Avona. Not that high of a seeing. Yeah. You've seen this low, the most of the Father that'll fit through the little swizzle stick down here. Okay? Right. That's it. You haven't seen the fire hose of the Father.
We're capable of
right.
And plus you'd have had to skip the Spirit and the Son.
Trivial. Yeah, right. Yeah, you would have done a very magical thing. Right. See, so that's the sort of thing where, you know, there's no way that you could not misinterpret that if all you have is the Bible and, or just that sentence from the Bible. You know, the Revelation is here trying to clear that up. You know, like it tried to clear up, we didn't even mention, it is finished. You know, they're saying, no, that's not like just, I guess I'm going to stop breathing now. I mean, that isn't what he was saying there. Which is what everyone thinks he was saying, that my breathing is finished.
That's finished.
No, the seventh bestowal is finished.
An aspect of completion.
All the bestowals are finished.
Right, all of the bestowals. Right. I'm about to acquire a supreme type deity. They often do that to try to give you a whole new way of understanding the truth that flows through passages in the Bible.
Took them a billion years.
Yeah. I mean, talk about it is finished. I mean, yeah.
So he's talking about an achievement, not just the expiration of his mortal life.
Yeah.
And I just, I just remember that when he said he chose to do the will of the Father. And the Father wanted him to be an example to all of his creation, he made the decisions that he made.
Right, the six great decisions, to not manifest God the Supreme, but to continue manifesting God the Father. To not do any power personality synthesis stuff. That's what the six great decisions about. Every one of them is, I'm not going to, manifest power synthesized with my personality presence. I'm just going to continue to manifest my personality presence, expressing the will of the Father. You're not going to see me do the fancy tricks. But it was
had the big pictures.
Right, and that's what those were about. He's not going to, now. He's in the second half of his universe career, and he's God the Supreme revealing. He was God the Father revealing. Now he's got the supreme revealing. You know, but he didn't start that here. He waited until afterwards.
Right.
You know, the first manifestation of that is pouring out spirit of truth.
Right.
That's God's supreme revealing. You know, the fact that it's on all flesh, that it has a relationship to the whole. That's a simple little beginning manifestation of supremacy.
Now for my first supreme.
Yeah, sorry. All right, let's take a moment here.